This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. There is also a lot of physical abuse in this movie. So just be aware that that is going to be happening. We're going over I, Tonya. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for One Dry Kiss? Hello, everybody. Thank you and welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com-ish movies. Today we are going over I, Tonya, and I am happy to say we have two very special guests with us today. Yay! We are being joined by Ash and Jessica, the host of the Histories and Mysteries Uncovered podcast. Welcome, ladies.
Thank Hello. You. Hello, everyone. We are so excited to be here.
And as always, with me, the Wayne to my Garth, the aspirin to my headache, my forever co-host Corinne is also here.
And I am here with my co-host, who, if we were in a competition, I would not pay for somebody to break her kneecaps, Miss Tamara Crisio.
That is paramount to a good relationship.
I know.
Just don't bash my kneecaps.
Really in. Need that, yeah.
Yeah. So I have a funny anecdote about your guys' podcast that I listened to not too long ago. It was Danny Masterson episode.
And
you guys were talking about The Walking Dead, which I happened to be watching. And so you were like, da-da-da, going back and forth about some facts and things that happened in The Walking Dead series. And Jessica said, who's not watching Walking Dead? I'm not going to do any spoilers. Everybody's seen it already. And I was like, no, I haven't. I haven't seen it. And then she was like scrolling on her, she was scrolling on her computer and she goes, oh yeah, there's Tara's head on a spike. And I'm like, Tara's head's on a spike? Why is her head on a spike?
Oh no, that's a really like shocking scene too. I'm sorry we ruined that for you.
But I was like the whole time out of all of them, because I was like kind of peppering through when we decided to do this and picking like the episodes that really interested me. And I'm like, of all the episodes, this is the one I picked. And it's totally a spoiler episode for something that I'm still trying to get through now. So thank you, ladies, for that.
Get with the program. It's been forever.
But I did totally enjoy that episode after that. And I still haven't seen Tara's head on a spike, so I'm waiting.
Oh, it's a pretty shocking scene.
Really?
You don't expect it. And then it's like, oh, God.
Welcome to the Walking Dead podcast that you just turned us into.
It's a little bit late, but here we are.
It's never too late. I suggested that we recap Highway to Heaven episodes, but Tamara wasn't interested for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, my God. That was one of your banner ideas that I just had to shoot right down. Corinne, I love you, but no.
They probably don't even know what Highway to Heaven is.
I don't. I know there's a song. That's Highway to Hell.
It's an 80s TV show starring Michael Landon.
Who's that?
The dad in Little House in the Prairie TV series.
Okay, he's hot. Okay.
And he and Victor French, who plays his friend in the Little House on the Prairie series with the beard. His friend is this drunk guy who's at loose ends, and he ends up running into an angel, Michael Landon, and then every episode they go around and they help somebody.
Aren't you guys sad we didn't do that?
Sad.
It sounds like
touched
another
by an angel.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it is. Yeah. It's the original Touched by an Angel.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
My mom loves Touched by an Angel. I think she bought like the whole series or something like that. She loves it.
It was a great show.
I'm sure she knows about Highway to Heaven, too. Just
she probably
her.
Does.
Yeah.
That sounds like something to be up her alley. Yeah.
Okay, ladies. So I have a question for you. Your podcast is called Histories and Mysteries Uncovered. I know. It's sexy. How did you come up with what you're doing, like your title and a brief, hey, this is who we are?
Yes. Do you remember how we came up with the title?
I really don't. All I know is that I really love history. She loves true crime. And it was a lot of back and forth and looking
so
on the internet.
So many names you're looking for, yeah.
Well, and we were trying to cross-reference with everybody else, being sure it wasn't taken.
Yeah.
And then we finally settled on Histories and Mysteries originally. And then there was nobody with that name. And then all of a sudden, like a year into our podcast, this other podcast showed up with the same name. Ugh. But they had been out for longer, so it didn't make any sense.
So I have no idea how we didn't see them. So it was just got confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we added the uncovered.
I think I saw that when I was trying to search for your podcast. I saw them. And then I believe there's also kind of like a docudrama series called Histories and Mysteries too.
And that other podcast also had a co-host named Jessica.
What?
Yeah. So it was very confusing. So we just decided to change it. And now we're the only one out there.
Yes. So far. So.
You have really cute cover art. I like your little your little pictures of yourself and stuff. It's super cute. That's how I know it's theirs because they got the cute little pictures of them drawing of themselves. Yeah.
My friend did that.
Yeah.
He's a graphic designer and he did that for us. So
yeah, he did a really good job. We loved it.
Oh, what's his name?
His name is Matt Oliveira.
Shout out to Matt Oliveira, fellow graphic designer.
And his Instagram is Last Matt Standing.
Aww. That's cute. I like that.
So he's awesome.
We are fans, Matt. We are fans.
So are we.
Yeah, we really liked it. And then it was cute because, so we also do some paranormal stuff. We don't do as much paranormal as true crime or history, but we do some paranormal. And we, for a little bit, had a third co-host who ended up having to leave, but she worked for Haunted Walk. So she did a lot of paranormal for us. And he made her a little cartoon and she was like a little ghost type thing.
No, she was just like a little tour guide. She had her cloak that they wear for the Haunted Walk.
Yeah. It was really cute. And then obviously when she left, we took her out of the logo, but he's really, really good. Yeah.
Speaking of paranormal, I did also listen to one of your more recent episodes and am going to now visit the Queen Mary, thanks to you guys.
Oh.
You can actually stay in it like a hotel.
Yeah, that was Jessica's. Lots of crazy hauntings in that one.
Are you staying there or just visiting?
Oh, I want to stay there. I actually was thinking about staying there years and years and years ago because their hotel is dog friendly. And it was when I still had Melody. And so I was like, oh my God, I should stay there. And then it kind of fell off my radar and then heard your guys' podcast. And then there's a scary movie called The Queen Mary that freaked me the freak out because, sorry. Why am I censoring myself? Freak me the fuck out. Where, like, the people that stay there get possessed, Ash.
I feel like I saw that. Yes, I did see that.
And so it was just like, and it's like inevitable. Like, if you stay there, you get transported back to when all these people, like, got killed and murdered, and then you're, like, stuck there forever. I think it's called The Queen Mary. It's not very well known. It's not very old. And Yeah, I think it was on Netflix. I'm not entirely sure, but it freaked me out. It was very like, oh, nope, maybe I'm not going. I don't know.
Okay. I was not a fan of Queen Mary.
Ooh.
I didn't think the acting was very good, and I thought the story was not super great. But
really?
I have to say, I've watched probably every single horror movie out there, so I am very hard to put.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Discerning. One star for Tamara, 0 stars for Ash. You be the judge. So we have talked extensively about horror movies, but this is not a horror movie podcast.
No.
We are doing a rom-com-ish movie.
Although her childhood was kind of a horror.
Whose childhood?
I, Tanya.
God, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, her name's not I, Tanya, right?
Yeah, I know. As soon as I said I, Tanya, I was like, well, her name's just Tanya, so I probably said that.
Yes, and we picked this movie specifically because we are with the Histories and Mysteries Uncovered ladies, because it is true crime-ish in the way that there was a crime that was committed.
Absolutely.
But I think we should jump into it. Corinne, did you happen to do a synopsis for us?
Why, yes, I did.
And then try to take credit for the whole outline.
Yes, I did.
Yes, I did.
I wrote this entire outline. Thank you. Thank you. I did a really good job, by the way. I'm very funny. No, Tamara didn't. I just wrote the synopsis. Tanya Harding, played by Margot Robbie, has had a really hard childhood, has a super shitty mom, played by Allison Janney, and is starting to have a really hard young adulthood, thanks to her boyfriend slash husband, played by Sebastian Stan.
What?
I don't know who that person is, but yes.
So hot.
Oh my God, I love Sebastian Stan.
Her one safe space for her is ice skating, where she has excelled since she was a small child. Her ice skating is so much of a safe space, as she has excelled so much that she has a chance to go to the Olympics. Wah! If it just weren't for that pesky Nancy Kerrigan standing in her way. What's a girl to do? What's a girl to do? Will Tanya kidnap Nancy and hold her for ransom? Will Tanya take the high road and win her way on merit? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
Was anybody here shocked when they found out Margot Robbie was playing Tanya Harding?
She did such a good job.
I know, but when they first were like talking about prior to the movie being made, they're like, yeah, Margot Robbie's going to be. I was like, I'm sorry, who? Seriously?
Yeah, because she's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, and my husband and I, the whole movie, were like, how did they get her to look so ugly? She's so pretty.
Yeah.
They even make that comment in the Barbie movie.
Yeah. Like, how pretty she is.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, when you add a spiral perm and some hair bear bangs onto anyone, it'll age a person, for one. And, you know,
that is fair, because there was one point where she was in the mirror putting on her makeup and I'm like, too much rouge. That lipstick's not your color. Honey, what are you doing with your eyeliner?
Very, very 80s hair, makeup, dress.
Do you guys remember this happening in the news?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, not me. I wasn't born yet.
Oh, yes.
My husband was. He was not, like, he remembers it, but.
What year is this again?
94, I think. And
I was going to say, I feel like I remember it too, but I was trying to gauge if I was insane or not. But yes, I do remember it.
Yeah, I was a big figure skating fan at that point in time, so I totally remember it.
Yeah.
And speaking of memories, Tamara. Mm-hmm. Do you remember this movie? Are you ready to get us started on I, Tanya?
Yes, yes, I am. me. We open with a very dressed down blonde woman played by Margot Robbie. What? She's in a small, nondescript kitchen smoking a cigarette. A camera set up in front of her as if she's about to be interviewed, and the subtitles below her read, Tanya Harding, former Olympic figure skater. But we don't hear from her yet, because we cut to other people in Tanya's life. There's Lavanya Harding, Tanya's mother, who's got a bird perched on her shoulder, a terrible bull haircut, and an oxygen tube in her nose. Lavanya motions to the bird and happily informs us and her interviewer, this is my sixth husband right here, the best of them. In old home movie plays of earlier years, we see Tanya as a happy little four-year-old girl on a tricycle. She's being playfully chased around by her father. As a younger, but just as surly, Lavanya sits on a stoop smoking a cigarette. Current Lavanya tells us over the movie, Tanya was my fifth child from husband number four. She was always a handful, and I guess we spoiled her, which is a hat trick, seeing as we didn't have shit. I always drove her to her practices and competitions, sewed all her costumes, but to her, I'm a monster. Then we cut to an older woman in a nicer living room. Her subtitles read, Diana Rawlinson, Tanya Harding's coach. Diane tells us, people either love Tanya or were not big fans. Kind of like America. People love that or are not big fans. And Tanya was totally American.
I feel very conflicted about America, but yes. Don't.
There are a few other interviewees on camera, like Sean Eckhart, Tanya's ex-bodyguard. Huge air quotes on the bodyguard, Martin Maddox, an ex-hard copy reporter, and Jeff Glooley, Tanya's ex-husband. They're all telling their versions of the story, but we'll leave them out for now. Finally, we hear from Tanya. She's asked by a voice off screen, what's people's impression of her? She takes a few drags of her cigarettes and answers plainly, people's impression? That I'm a real person? That I never apologize for growing up poor or being a redneck, which I am? In a sport where the judges want you to be this old-timey version of what a woman's supposed to be, for being the first American woman to land a triple axel, she pauses and nods smugly for a few beats before smiling tightly and saying, so fuck 'em. I wrote that out verbatim because her answer didn't really make sense to me. Did anybody else have that response where I'm like, did you answer the question?
Yeah, it was
kind of convoluted.
I get what she was trying to do, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting.
She was trying to find a workaround just to say, fuck them. So she was like, how can I say fuck them to everybody that's ever fucked me over in my life?
Well, and I mean, we'll get to it. But if what has happened in the movie is true, I get it. I get why she's pissed.
Yeah. But then there's always that sentiment. Like, you can either rise above or just sit in your shit. and say, mm-hmm. this is how it happened, so this is how it has to be.
Yeah.
So I do agree, but I also think she did get a bad rap. And we'll have to go and do a consensus with all of us as to whether or not she did know about what was going to happen.
I'm very interested to find out. And I'm doing the research on her story, so I'll keep you posted on what the
I know.
Says
I can't wait for your episode because I am dying to find out some of the actual facts behind this.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And I did like a quick like fact checking thing, and it seems like a lot of this is pretty true. There's a couple things that were different that I'll go into, but yeah. But the whole, you know, did she know or not thing, I'm excited to get more into to see what I really think.
Yay. It's always fun to get the movie and then get the real story behind the movie. So
yeah. Across the screen reads Portland, Oregon, 40 years earlier, and we get a flashback.
Can I just say that when it's kind of a spoiler to the spoilers, but at the end of the movie, when they flash back to her in her living room with the fucking bird on her shoulder, I died.
Are you talking about at the end when they show the credits and the actual people that were like, yes.
I'm yes. Like, oh. And I'm like, the bird's real.
Oh my gosh. Who so plays cool. Tanya's mom?
Allison Janney.
Allison Janney.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. I love Allison Janney. Yeah. God damn.
So it's younger Lavanya standing on the ice rink, smoking a cigarette, holding 4-ish-year-old Tanya's hand and glaring at a woman who's giving lessons to an older group of girls. She waves the lady over, calling, Diane, it's Lavanya Harding. I spoke to you on the phone earlier. A young Diane Rawlinson reluctantly skates over and politely says, Mrs. Harding, I'm so sorry. There's no smoking on the ice. Lavanya tells her, don't worry. I'll smoke quietly. Diane tries explaining again that she doesn't train beginner skaters, but Lavanya is insistent. All my daughter does is talk about skating. I can't shut her up about it. So it's easier if I just put her on the ice, if you know what I mean. And we figure with the right training, she can make the most out of her gift, like the ice capades or something. I think this is the only good thing that this mother ever did for her daughter in her whole life was getting her into the skate lessons and being really forceful about it.
Agreed. But part of me is like, is it because she just wanted her out of her hair for like an hour so she wasn't running around or
probably.
Because that's how she says it. Like, I just need to get her, like, let her run this out, this energy out.
Yeah.
So, to drive me crazy.
Diane still declines and heads back to her lesson. Once her back's turned, Lavanya directs little Tanya, go on, skate. And the girl gleefully shoots across the ice. She only gets halfway across the rink before she has Diane's rapt attention. Current Tanya tells us in a voiceover, 6 months later, I won my first competition. I was 4, okay? I mean, those bitches didn't know what hit them. We cut to a few years later and an older 8-ish-year-old Tanya artfully skates around the same rink while her mother is in the stands heckling her, yelling, wrong, ordinary, are you even trying? There's other places I'd rather fucking be, while spiking her thermos of coffee. Tanya stops to talk to a fellow skater and her mom chastises her. Don't talk to that girl, she's your enemy. Tanya skates toward her mother, who accuses, where do you think you're going? Tanya says, to the bathroom, and Lavanya shakes her head. I paid for you to skate, so skate. The little girl glumly heads back onto the ice, does a fast upright spin, lands her position, and looks at her mom expectantly, who whispers, oh shit, from the sidelines, because Tanya has peed all over herself and it trickles onto the ice. Her mom shrugs and commands flatly, skate wet. Ugh. Kurt Lavanya, in a voiceover, says, if you listened to Tanya, you'd think I operated on her daily without anesthesia. I hit her one fucking time with a hairbrush. But the flashbacks show her beating the shit out of the little girl in several different instances. Tanya's mother justifies this, saying being tough on her daughter was because she skated better when she was enraged.
Oh, that was such bullshit. When she said that and then we see stuff later, I am like, fuck off with yourself, Lavanya. Like, fuck off. Nope, 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 nope. I am not having your attitude.
No, she was horrible.
I just watched that portion of a documentary today about the hairbrush incident.
Oh.
With Lavanya being like, I never once hit that girl. And Tanya's like, she was beating me with a hairbrush.
I mean, honestly, just looking at Lavanya, who would you believe? Just her personality and her persona and her fuck off, like, attitude.
Yeah, she 100% beat her children. Like, there's no question about that.
And even if she didn't beat them per se, like, just say, like, put that out there that she never put hands on them. Like, having your daughter piss on herself and then yes. make her skate wet is just a form of torture all in itself that I can't even.
Yes.
Like, absolute abuse.
Yeah. Emotionally abusive, 100%.
Next, we see a flashback that shows the very different relationship Tanya had with her dad. They're hunting rabbits in the woods together, and Tanya is filling in her father on Lavanya's most recent antics. She complains that mom made her wear her skating uniform to school because it was picture day, and they could use the photos for competition. Which, why couldn't you have just changed your clothes when you got to school?
Oh, no. That would be too easy and too kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, and that's the thing, right? It's these moments too where it's like you were not the best parent.
Right.
I think that she just wanted everyone to be like, you are an ice skater. You will claim that you are an ice skater. That is all that you are, is an ice skater. Give me a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, 100%.
Maybe there were some unfulfilled dreams that Lavanya had about maybe being an ice skater that she was pushing off on her daughter too that we just don't know about.
For sure. But then everyone teased Tanya and called her white trash. Mm. Her dad listens thoughtfully before Tanya asks him, do you love her? He spots a rabbit in the distance, hands her a gun, and answers quietly, kind of, do you? Tanya takes aim and says half-heartedly, yeah. The rabbit's in her sights and her dad asks, like, you love me? The little girl says soberly, nope, pulls the trigger and hits the rabbit right between the eyes. We cut to a short while later. We see Lavanya arguing with Diane during practice because at the next competition, Tanya needs a fur coat. Oh. Lavanya is livid because she doesn't even have a fur coat and she knows it's because they want Tanya to look like these uppity little shits. Diane informs her, it's more than appearance. Tanya should fit in, and right now it looks like she chops wood every morning. Lavanya counters, she doesn't fit in, she stands out, and she does chop wood every morning.
Huh.
The coach, exasperated, pleads for Lavanya to work with her and adds, it's also about how she's growing up. Lavanya can read between the lines and gets in Diane's face and cries, lick my ass. She can do a triple before leaving in a huff.
In a huff. In a half. Okay, Tamara. Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, fur coat. Ah!
Fifth movie in a row that we've had a fur coat in where we've had this excess of no fur coats in any of the movies we've been watching. So
ever in like the year and a half we've been doing this, I know.
Yes.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I feel... That's okay. So I love figure skating and I love gymnastics, but that's one thing that I hate about it is that the scores can be so
subjective. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like with basketball, you either score the point or you don't. There's not a lot of subjectiveness to it. And it's so ridiculous to me that part of the sport was looking rich. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in their outfits, like, yes. Like they're judged on their outfits and in gymnastics too. And in some other sports as well, there have been problems with the women's outfits, as in when they try and have more cover on their outfits, they're like, no, we can't see you play volleyball unless it's in short shorts, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I saw that. That's crazy.
I never realized that their ice skating outfits cost thousands of dollars. Like, ooh. That is, they are not a lot to them. So spandex and lace.
It's like a bathing suit with some frillies. Why does it cost so much to make?
Just look, they don't even always look that great.
Just look through the garbage can in Hooters and find some of those tights to put on and then, you know, put your bathing suit over that and you're set. I'm just saying is all.
A good ballerina tutu to top it all off. I think we got something going.
Yeah.
And that's what Tanya wanted to do. So
some of her outfits, too, that she sewed herself. Well, we'll get into it. But I was like, honey, you can't tell that doesn't look good. Oh, man.
Oof. See, I liked them.
Aww.
I thought they were cute. Honestly, for her hand sewing them, I thought they were great.
I thought they were cute too.
Not all of them. And I might be referring to the ones that she actually wore, like in real life, where I was just like, there was only a few where I was like, And it was okay. mostly coming from probably the perspective of a judge. So I was being completely ice skating judgmental on that. Because yeah. I'm like, if you're trying to get on their better side and you're coming out in that, it's almost like you're just scraping the scab. You're just trying to like yeah. get under somebody's skin.
Yeah.
And I wanted her to be accepted and loved.
Yeah.
I know. You were being ice skating judgmental. I don't know about you.
We then cut to Daddy Harding. Approve this.
Tam.
Daddy.
Daddy.
He's taking the rabbits he and Tanya shot, and he was pulling the bloody bodies off in their driveway.
That was so gross. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to see that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I thought it was so cute because he made her her fur coat.
I was like, you thought skinning so rabbits sweet. Was cute? I don't think that was cute. No. Then you finished your sentence. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and what I don't realize is, I mean, was Goodwill around at the time? Because I'm pretty sure you could probably get a fur coat from Goodwill for like a buck.
But why would you when you could get them for free from the woods that, you know, yeah, provide true. All?
True. And then it provides food for his family, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true.
So he made a beautiful fur coat for her, and then she wore it to her next competition.
Was it, though?
Was it beautiful? It was rough. It was rough.
That fur coat was raggedy looking, but, you know, she works with what she had. However, honestly, the fact that her coach felt she needed to have a fur coat in order to have the proper look is just, that's just bad off, mm-hmm. Right off the bat.
Well, it's insane because most of those ice skaters were little girls and teenagers, like, wearing fur coats. What? Excuse me?
Yeah.
Yeah. She passes a few of her competitors in the rink, and one girl snarkily says, "What kind of coat is that?" Mm. Little Tanya flips the bird, and current Tanya's voiceover tells us, "If I wanted something, I had to get it myself. But the one thing she couldn't get is her parents to stay together." A flashback to little Tanya chasing her dad out the door as Lavanya yells, "Go, get out. I thought you'd never leave." Tanya begs her dad to take her with him, but he works 12-hour night shifts and can't look after her. He drives away from his little girl standing in the street crying and shrieking, "Take me with you."
Oh, that was heartbreaking.
I got teary-eyed because I'm like, can you imagine that? Like, your dad that you love is leaving you with your Lavanya mom that...
Ooh. Yeah. That was so sad.
It totally reminded me of the scene in Hope Floats where the dad leaves and she's like, "Take me with you!"
And so heartbreaking.
Yeah. And both of those are just like, oh.
That little actress did a really good job.
McKenna Grace.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, she plays the girl, like the little version of like everybody nowadays, McKenna Grace. Yeah. She's in everything. Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah, she is really good.
So that ends Tanya's happy little childhood because we next see her at 15 with braces, still being coached by Diane and owning the ice. It's the day she meets Jeff Galooly. And who doesn't like saying Galooly? Galooly, 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 Galooly.
That is a fun name to say. It wouldn't be a fun name to have, but a fun name to say.
Yes. And part of the genius of this movie is they have the same actors playing their teenage selves as they play their current day self. So 18-year-old Jeff looks about 38. He's ogling her with friend, bodyguard, Sean Eckhart, as she masterfully executes routines. Current Tanya's voiceover tells us, "I met Jeff at the rink. I was there 8 hours a day practicing, but I'll be fucked if I knew what he was doing there. I remember the day of our first date." A flashback shows Tanya getting ready, shirtless, and wearing a bra in her bathroom. A 20-something guy leers at her through a cracked door, then comes over and cups her motherfucking breast. Nuh-uh. Tanya smacks him in the face, rightfully so, knocks him on the ground, and begins beating the shit out of him with her curling iron. Her voiceover informs us, "My half-brother, Creepy Chris, was staying with us, and I remember our first date because I had Creepy Chris arrested earlier that day. It was a good day." We see Tanya and Jeff later that evening. Their first date is at an all-you-can-eat buffet. Oh, my God. And I just had a conversation on a dating app with this guy. And he's like, I like going out to eat. And I was like, great. And he's like, what do you like to eat? And I was like, stuff. And then he's like, what do you think about buffets? And I was like, they're okay, but if you're looking for somebody who eats a lot of food, I'm not your girl. And then it was just like silence after that. And I was like, okay, well then, on that
bring
one
your
out.
Bestie to come as your chaperone, and she'd be happy to pick up the slack for you, Corinne.
He dates the both of us together. It's great. Nothing wrong with that.
Package deal.
Yeah. Tanya and Jeff shyly smile at each other as Lavanya eyes them suspiciously and asks, Jeff, are you a gardener or a flower? There's two things you can be in life. So since Tanya can't garden to save her life, you're going to have to do it. Tanya is livid and tells Jeff, don't answer her. So Lavanya changes tactics and asks, have you two fucked yet? We don't get an answer. Instead, we cut to a different day. Tanya is walking to Jeff's house in a nicer fur coat, where he is outside working on a car in his driveway. They hug awkwardly and talk as if this may be their second or third date. Ooh. Tanya tells Jeff her family used to have money. She has a fur coat, after all. And Jeff says bluntly, well, my family's poor. He's attempting to fix his truck while they talk, but he's doing it wrong, so she takes his ratchet from him and shows him how to do it correctly. He's impressed and hands her a rag, and she's already wiping her hands on her pants. No biggie. She asks what he's going to do now that school is over, and he shares that he works for the Association of Retarded Persons Driving Them Around. Those are his words. And we're going to pause a moment to talk about ARC's name, which is what I believe he's referring to. It's an organization that helps people with intellectual and developmental disabilities find jobs and helps workplaces meaningfully support them. So they do a great thing. That having been said, their name has changed with the times. They were founded in the 50s, and their name used to be the National Association of Retarded Children, NARC. Then it changed to the 70s, National Association of Retarded Citizens, still NARC, to the 80s, Association of Retarded Citizens, ARC. And now they simply go by ARC, but what the letters stand for, I'm guessing, still remains the same. So, yay!
Wow.
I know.
Oh. Ugh.
I think they just needed like a new, fresh name entirely. Yeah. Like ditch yeah. ARC, go for a new name. They do a good thing though.
Yeah,
I don't understand the whole gardener or flower thing. Can we explain? I feel young and silly, but I don't understand.
Well, you're either taking care of someone or you're being taken care of.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she needs to be taken care of. She needed to be tended to and watered so she can bloom.
Oh, that's gross. Okay.
Anyhow, Jeff shares that he could go to college as it's paid for because his dad died in the military. Tanya says that she got pulled out of school to focus on skating, and Jeff marvels at how talented she is. He looks at her with hearts in his eyes and says, it's like your superpower. It's amazing what you can do. She smiles shyly at him, then twirls in his driveway, miming some moves, before she leans back against the car and asks, so, do you like me? He chuckles and says, you're so fucking pretty. She responds, no, I'm not. You are. And they awkwardly kiss.
Oh, sweet. Until later, but so yes. Sweet.
Yeah.
And Tanya's voiceover tells us that he was a good kisser, but that didn't look like a good kiss to me.
I don't know. I feel like any kiss with Sebastian Stan is a good kiss. He could lick me upside my face and I'd be okay with it. I had that happen once. It wasn't a good kiss.
Actually. These people don't know us.
Well, they're gonna get to know me very well.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
Did you hear that One Dry Kiss podcast? That girl Ashley they had likes people licking her in the face.
It's really weird.
Now I know how to greet her when I see her in person.
Hi, Ashley.
Only Sebastian Stan, everyone.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. Oh, maybe I might be okay if Ryan Gosling did it as well. You know.
You're so generous. That's what I like about you.
But I thought it was crazy, and this seems to be the case in a lot of cases, that she somehow found this guy. Like, she grew up in such a toxic household, and then she finds this guy that is just equally as toxic. And, you know, he wasn't showing any red flags in the beginning. And it's just so sad to me that I just imagine how different her life could have been had she found a good guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I wonder if she wouldn't have been interested, because that's not what love looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be, yeah.
Anywho, Tanya's voiceover tells us he was really sweet in the beginning and a good kisser, which I veto. And he told me that he loved me. But in the next flashback scene, we see the young couple arguing in a car, and Jeff slaps her across the face hard. Then we see them making up. Tanya breaks the fourth wall while she and Jeff are in the middle of getting it on and informs us, "My mom used to hit me, and she loved me." And we get a montage of their abusive relationship where Jeff apologizes and Tanya goes back to him because it'll never happen again. Uh-huh. Tanya's voiceover continues, "He was the first boy I ever loved." As the next flashback shows Jeff bashing her face against a wall and shattering a picture frame. Oof. Her younger self breaks the fourth wall again and tells us, "The only problem is he beat the shit out of me." We cut to older and wiser Tanya in the kitchen as she explains, "And the whole time I thought it was my fault. Nancy gets hit one time and the world goes to shit. For me, it was an all-the-time occurrence." Current day Jeff's interview interrupts as he tells us his version of those events. He never hit her. He was actually pretty meek, but she did hit him and fired a gun at him. His flashback, showing his version of the story, is him, younger, running out of the house while a younger Tanya chases after him with the shotgun. She fires and tells us, "This is bullshit. I never did this," while pumping the next round. And current Jeff corrects himself and explains the scene we just watched by saying, "Well, not right now. We're still happy early on." We cut to the morning after one of the young couple's rougher fights. Tanya's at home eating cereal with her mom, who's criticizing her for having a black eye and saying, "You're dumb as shit for letting any man hit you." Tanya argues, "You used to hit Dad." And Lavanya, annoyed, claims, "That was different." Tanya tells her mom that Jeff said he was sorry, and mom reiterates that she's a dumb piece of shit to think it's okay to get beat on. Through spoonfuls of cereal, Tanya mutters, "Wonder where I got that idea."
I loved that. "I wonder where I got that idea." I was like,
yeah. I would probably say that to her and like shrink, expecting to get the shit beat out of me. Her mother, incensed, answers, "Maybe you deserve to get hit to teach you to keep your big mouth shut. Sure helps me out." Tanya gets up to leave for practice, but before she can, Lavanya commands, "Hey, kiss your mother goodbye." And Tanya reluctantly pecks her on the cheek before escaping to the ice.
Hated that. It was such a control power move.
Yes. Yes. Like, you know what? You fucking hate me, but you're going to come over and kiss me and play nice, whether you like it or not.
Sweet sassy molassy, if Tanya isn't in the middle of some fucked up trauma bonding abusive bullshit, I have no idea what's happening to her.
I know. It's awful.
The abuse, the love bombing, the makeup, which with couples and also with her mom as well, I'm sure. Although I doubt her mom does much love bombing. Usually involves some really intense, and with couples, usually involves some really intense sex, and then you rinse, wash, and repeat. And just in case you're in a situation where your spirit is being squashed that way, there is help. And you can start your journey by calling the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233 or text START to 88788.
Oh my god, I thought you were going to plug self-help, and I'm like, we're not sponsored by them.
No.
We cut to 12 months later. The subtitles tell us that we are entering 1986 Skate America in Portland, Maine. We are backstage, and dozens of ice skaters are prepping, stretching, and putting on makeup while Tanya's in the rink hallway sneaking a cigarette. It's Tanya's turn to go on, and while the other skaters perform to classical music and demure leotards, Tanya comes out to ZZ Top's sleeping bag in an electric purple outfit, which I liked.
I loved that routine and that song.
Yeah. She skates flawlessly and lands a triple axel while Lavanya, Jeff, and Jeff's sidekick and soon-to-be ex-bodyguard, Sean, look on. Even though her skating performance was stellar, her scores are low. Off the ice, Tanya is irate, and her coach, Diane, reminds her that the judges' ratings are a reflection of her unconventional choices, which is bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Well, much like Surya Bonaly, who at the time, who was an amazing skater, she also had to deal with racism because she was Black. She was French also. But while Tanya at least had the advantage of being white, she was criticized for being too manly and athletic when she skated. And she was just fantastic, but she dealt with so much stuff, which, like I said, I think a lot of it is race, but also it was, I think it was probably classist as well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And she didn't fit the norm. Like, she wasn't the cookie cutter one that they wanted to see. But thankfully, things are eking away from that. And there's more diversity in sports than ever. And people are starting to, they're celebrating the differences. They're celebrating people that kind of break off from the norm. Like in tennis, I'm seeing it a lot now. And so on and so, because I used to play tennis, and then it was the same thing. Like, you see the same people that look the same, that dress the same, that act the same, and then now it's like going in a completely different direction, which is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Tanya argues, and let me preface this, this was a quote directly from her. "I don't want to dress like a retarded tooth fairy, and I don't want to be conventional. I did the triple axel. The judges have to give me my fucking score before leaving in a huff."
In a huff.
Later that night, over dinner, Tanya's eating while Lavanya fumes about her performance. She tells her daughter, "You skated like a graceless bull dyke." Again, quote from the movie. "I was embarrassed for you." Tanya sheepishly apologizes, but Lavanya will have none of it and tells her to stop talking back. Tanya says that her saying sorry is not talking back, and things escalate. Tanya begins shouting that her mom's crazy, and Lavanya tells her, "You're going to start paying rent if you insist on sleeping with that mustache, because I'm not supporting a whore my whole life." Tanya screams that she doesn't even want to live there, and in a rage, Lavanya throws dishes at her, and in a fury, grabs a knife and flings it at her daughter.
Oof.
It stabs Tanya in the arm, not deep, but deep enough to stand, as Lavanya's face falls because she realizes she has gone too far. Tanya wordlessly takes the knife out of her arm and slams it on the kitchen counter on the way out the door. And I thought that was a very good imagery because there was still blood on the knife when she put it down.
Mm-hmm.
We are interrupted by current Lavanya's interview as she scoffs unapologetically, saying, "Tell me a family that doesn't have problems." And then current Jeff explains that Tanya and him got a place together after that, which, one horrible situation to another.
Out of the frying pan and into the fire.
Yeah.
After that, things changed for Jeff. His voiceover informs us that he stopped planning for college and the Air Force, but he didn't care. He liked the idea of taking care of Tanya because he was a gardener.
Yes, Jessica, yes, good job.
And at first, things go well. It was their happiest time. The young couple lived together in a small house, and we get a montage of them encouraging each other, taking care of each other, joking, four-wheeling in the mud, and just enjoying each other's company, which I loved. I loved that for them and for her because she needed that.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, it's so upsetting that what comes next is what came next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with Jeff, Tanya can keep skating. At our next competition, her performance is good, but her scores are still low. This enrages Tanya so much that she interrupts a competing skater's performance to confront the judges. She skates over to the judges' box and yells, "Am I ever going to get the scores I deserve? I'm up every morning working my ass off, so I'd prefer it if you tell it to my face that you're never going to give me a fair score." One of the judges tells her flatly, "This is how it's done. Some of these girls have paid their dues." Tanya counters loudly, "I don't give a shit. I outskated them."
Boom.
To which the judge gives her a once-over and says smugly, "We also judge on presentation."
There it is.
Which is such bullshit.
Mm.
It's outrageous because she was so good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, her behavior was out of line. You don't interrupt another skater's performance to bitch about yours, you know?
I can imagine her frustration, though. Like, I can just imagine that, you know, you're the best and you know you're besting all the other competitors. And the judges are still like, "Yeah, but we don't like you, so."
Yeah, but you're poor, so.
Mm-hmm.
You're poor.
You're poor and you play ZZ Top to your routines, which might be seen as groundbreaking today, but.
Yeah.
Tanya, in disbelief, shakes her head and argues, "Well, if you can come up with $5,000 for a costume, then maybe I wouldn't have to make one." Till then, just stay out of my face.
That's like a freaking Oscar dress right there. $5,000 for that little piece of material.
That's insane.
I love that she's like, stay out of my face, when she was literally the one getting in their face. Like, girl, they didn't come to you.
How can they stay out of your face if they have to judge you? They do have to look at you at some point.
She begins skating away when one judge calls after her. Maybe you're not as good as you think. Maybe you need to pick another sport.
Boo. Oh, sure. Bitch, easy peasy.
Shut up. Tanya goes back to the judge and tells her to suck her dick and leaves in a huff, yelling, this is rigged. Coach Diane follows Tanya to the dressing room and explains calmly, do you think your scores are going to improve now that you've told her to, she can't finish the sentence, or say dick? Tells you what kind of a person that is. A boring one. And Tanya accuses Diane of trying to make her into something she's not. Diane retorts, I just want you to be a better competitor, or else I'm wasting my time. Tanya is livid and yells, then you're wasting your time. Dottie Teachman wants to be my coach anyways. She takes off her skates and chucks one at her coach, Oof. Adding, you're fucking fired, Diane. Tanya's voiceover informs us, that wasn't my fault, unless puberty is my fault.
That's one thing I noticed that was a common thread throughout is even with the things that she did, nothing was ever her fault.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Always.
And side note, Coach Diane was wearing a giant fur coat.
Because they're rich.
Because they're rich.
Just rubbing in a little bit. Fur, in case we didn't get enough fur in our previous four episodes before this one. Fur.
We're finally going to include some dialogue from the infamously wannabe bad boy and bodyguard, Sean Eckhart.
Can I just say that they cast him so perfectly?
Oh my gosh, yes. He looks exactly like him.
Chef's kiss. Like, yeah. So perfectly.
Yeah. His interview video has a slightly grainy quality, and the bottom corner says evidence, but it looks like he's sitting in a diner booth. He tells the camera, Jeff really did love her. I remember the time he took her to a Richard Marx concert. That's when I knew shit was serious.
He's so dumb.
Nothing says love like, wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you.
We have to get the obligatory singing in. Thank you, Corinne, for sneaking it in there.
The camera cuts to current Tanya, who tells us, you do dumb things when you're young, like marrying Jeff. We cut to their wedding day. It's a modest reception, but young Tanya and Jeff look happy, and they're surrounded by family and friends. Ash and Jessica, any thoughts on Tanya's wedding dress?
It was a dress. And it was white.
It was a dress. Nice, nice.
I guess it was very poofy. I didn't really pay attention to it too much. Let me look it up really quick. But
I honestly, same highs. I was so confused by her age throughout the whole movie. Because when she was supposed to be 15, she looked like she was 40. So it was very harsh.
That's a very 80s wedding dress, very 80s hair. I'm pretty sure my mom had that same hairdo. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is a big butt bow on it, which is one of Tam's favorites.
Okay. You better features. Stop that right there.
Well, that's actually really cute because she put a big butt bow on her skating outfit that she sewed.
Oh, yeah, she did.
Yeah. So that's a really cute butt bow.
Her signature.
I just thought this scene is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
One of many, Ash, one of many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. There's giant puffy sleeves, and it seems like it's going to be a beautiful moment, but Tanya's voiceover informs us that she was in it for the right reasons, like Jeff having a full-time job with benefits so she could stop working and focus on her skating like the other girls. Next, we see young Tanya in her wedding dress. She spots her mother on the outskirts of the party and heads towards her, smiling expectantly. Lavanya coolly tells her, "I don't know what to tell you." Tanya smiles as Lavanya straightens her daughter's pearl necklace. It almost looks like she's going to impart some sweet words of wisdom to her daughter, but instead says, "Marrying the first idiot who thinks you're pretty. You fuck dumb. You don't marry dumb." Tanya's smile tightens and she wordlessly pushes past her.
That was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It was. Mm-hmm. She had such a happy smile on her face when she saw her mom, even after everything her mom put her through. Like, she still wanted her mom there.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's her daughter's wedding day. Like, at least say something nice for once.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I wonder what kind of childhood Lavanya had to make her this monster of a mother.
No, I'm sure it was equally as bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's said, like, but I don't think that's true, because she said that she had a really good childhood and that her mom was very sweet. And she's
would
like,
she though?
And she's like, "My mother was sweet. I mean, I hated my mother even though she was nice." So she said that at some point when it,
she also said she wasn't abusive, so
yeah, fair.
Well, and I wonder how her dad was, you know, maybe her dad was the jerk or whatever, but
yeah, like the flip of Tanya's experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or maybe she was just like a sociopath or something, you know, just didn't have empathy or feel emotions, you know, who knows.
Yeah. So after this heart-wrenching exchange, the interview videos cut in and we get a group effort from almost everyone explaining the absolute banana saw skills it takes to land a triple axel, which in a nutshell is hurling yourself backwards from a forward position off your left leg for 3.5 rotations to land on the back outside of a razor thin blade. We then get a flashback backpack of young Tanya at the 1992 Nationals in Minneapolis. She's walking with her coach, Dodie, and grumbling about how she wasn't able to stick the triple axel in practice. Dodie is assuring her she can and will do it to prove all the judges wrong. And in contrast to the previous wedding scene where we hear, "Stars shining bright above you, night breezes seem to whisper, I love you." We hear a man a few feet away in the stands yelling, "You suck! You suck!" at Tanya. She lunges at him, but Dodie pulls her away and instead points her towards the ice and works with her to regain her focus. When the heckler returns to his seat, we see Lavanya, who's behind him, wordlessly hand him a wad of bills. After all, Tanya skates best when she's mad, right? Right?
This is awful. Horribly awful. But I feel like in Lavanya's mind, she was doing something nice for her. Not saying that that's an excuse or anything, but I think that's how she was thinking.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yes. Oof. Tanya waits on the ice when the music starts, and it's surprisingly a classical piece. She attacks her routine and lands the triple axel, making it look easy. Her face explodes into a smile, and her voiceover tells us, "It was totally the most awesomest thing. Leading up to it, I thought I can't do it, and then bam, I do it. And all these people who thought I can't do it, well, fuck you, I did." Tanya lands the rest of her routine, and her score reflects it. She gets 5.9s across the board.
That's out of 6.
Tanya explains that she felt loved for the first time. She knew she was the best figure skater in the world, but that love was short-lived. Ugh. A split screen of current Tanya and Jeff explains simultaneously, "After the triple axel, everything changed." We cut to Jeff coming home with groceries. Tanya rifles through the bags looking for her Dove ice cream bars. Jeff explains they can't afford them. And Eskimo pies are just as good.
Eskimo pies are not as good as Dove bars.
Yes, they are.
Quick poll.
I've never had an Eskimo pie. I've had Dove bars, which are really good. But I've never had an Eskimo pie.
Eskimo pies are fan. They're fan.
I've never had either. I don't think they're a thing here.
Oh.
And for those of you that don't know, I'm Canadian.
I was going to say, do they not have those in Canada?
Well, and also Eskimo, like the word is not, word. No. So there you go.
This movie's just bad all around. Also, can we explain that 5.9 is good, right? You said it's out of 6.
I said it's out of 6. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
I know. The scoring for ice skating is weird, but it's out of 6.
And I also want to say that in the movie, after she lands the triple axel, you see her like pump her arms like she's so excited. Yeah. And she did that in real life.
Yes.
Yeah, I loved it.
It was just so cute.
And it was so heartbreaking when she said she felt love for the first time.
No.
You know, like that's all, this whole story, that's all she ever wanted was to feel loved.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, broke my heart when she said that.
I do remember, that's one part I do remember of her seeing her, I don't think I saw her routine live, but when all the shit hit the fan, like the news stations were playing her hitting the triple axel like over and over again. And I remember just seeing her face because she did do that. She was like, oh my God, in the middle of her routine instead of maintaining her composure. But
yeah,
I know. I thought they were going to ding her for that. I was like, oh gosh, they're going to ding her for celebrating. But they didn't, so. Or maybe they did. Maybe that's why she didn't get sixes.
and Tamara, if you think Eskimo pies are the same as Dove, that's fine. When next time you come over, I'll get Eskimo pies and Dove bars, and I'll eat the Dove bars while you eat the Eskimo pies.
I'm not saying that that's my preference. I wouldn't say, like, I want an It's It bar or It's It sandwich before all of those. But well, I'm just saying, like, as far as chocolate covered ice cream goes, I think,
and nobody knows what Its Its are because those are San Francisco really regional treat. Yeah.
Let me explain if y'all weren't hungry as it is.
I am so hungry.
It is a ice cream sandwich, vanilla ice cream sandwich between two oatmeal cookies, and it's covered in chocolate.
I like mine with the chocolate.
So good.
That ice cream sounds amazing.
It's very good.
I'm eating chocolate right now, so I'm good.
Now that we're all thoroughly starving, let's go back to the story. Tanya starts complaining loudly because she's a world-class figure skater and deserves Dove bars, much like Corinne, but doesn't get to finish the sentiment because Jeff sucker punches her with a head of lettuce. The abuse gets more frequent. Tanya's voiceover explains, Jeff didn't seem to need a reason anymore. So Tanya gets fed up, packs a bag, and moves the fuck out of their house while Jeff's not looking. But she continues skating in competitions and is winning right alongside Christy Yamaguchi and Nancy Kerrigan. The skating world is up in arms because this rough-and-tumble girl from the wrong side of the tracks is going to be their champion. Current Tanya pops onto screen and asks, Can I interrupt to tell you something about Nancy Kerrigan? We were friends and would sometimes be roommates at competitions. We see a flashback of the two in a hotel, laughing, jumping on beds, smoking cigarettes, and shotgunning beers. Both of them, her and Nancy.
Uh-huh.
Tanya continues, The papers wanted her to be the princess and me the pile of shit. But who would bash their own friend's knee in?
I don't know.
I was very surprised by this in the movie because I never knew, like, Nancy Kerrigan, because they did, they painted her out to be like this super princessy perfection, like the epitome of figure skating. And there was a scandal shortly after because, you know, everybody was vilifying Tanya and raising up Nancy, and she was making all kinds of appearances. And this one time she was at a parade in Disneyland and she had a hot mic on and she's like, I can't believe they keep making me do this bullshit. And people heard her. And so they're like, oh,
no.
Uh-oh.
She's not pure and perfect? I can't believe she said that.
How dare she say bullshit?
Hmm.
We cut to Jeff trying to call Tanya from his friend Sean's house, which is hilarious because for some reason, his mom had to dial the phone. So they were downstairs. Sean and Jeff were downstairs. Sean's mom was upstairs. And Sean and Jeff had one phone, but the mom had to dial the phone from upstairs. If that all makes sense. Every time she hung up on Jeff, Sean had to yell back up to his mom, Mom, dial the number again. And she's like, okay. Tanya refuses to take Jeff's calls and only speaks to him long enough to remind him that she has a restraining order against him before hanging up. But Jeff's persistent. And after the third call back, Tanya just yells, fuck you, and hangs up. Jeff erupts with anger and jumps in his car with Sean tagging along. They're going to Sun Valley, hours away, where Tanya's practicing. The whole ride, Sean is spinning tales about how he's a spy and can utilize mind control if necessary so they can get in and out of the rink undetected.
And did you notice the motherfucker is sitting shirtless in the back seat, munching on potato chips, and I suspect he's wearing more potato chips than clothing, just FYI.
I thought he had peanut butter smeared all over him. I'm so confused. Pack, which is like peanut butter smeared on his chest. gosh. The potato chips sound a bit better.
But all that flies to shit when Jeff actually gets to Tanya's skating rink because he doesn't want to be subtle. Jeff storms to the edge of the ice and yells at the top of his lungs to Tanya and all the other practicers skating, "No! Fuck you!" He flips through the double birds and hustles out, content that he got the last word. I laughed so hard. I mean, in real life, that's terrifying, but I laughed so hard at that.
No, that's so funny because he literally drove hours.
Yeah.
To, like, through the night, just said he could get the last word in.
Yeah.
Well, she wouldn't take his phone calls.
Not surprisingly, next we see Tanya and Jeff reconciling. She's walking back into their shared house. He has rose petals on the floor and a freezer full of Dove bars. So just facts out there for people who are like, why would she go back to him? On average, it takes a woman about 7 times of leaving before she actually leaves an abusive marriage. It's not surprising that she went back to him several times.
Yeah.
Tanya's voiceover explains, "I liked being married, just not to him, and I wanted to be loved. But as soon as we got back together, things went to shit." We cut to Tanya on the ice. Getting back with her husband almost seems like a curse, and the closer she gets to the Olympics, the more she starts messing up her routine. We cut to the Albertville, France Olympics in 1992. Tanya is approaching the ice for potentially the most important performance of her life. The judges are excitedly commenting on her performance, hoping to see the triple axel, which would be the very first time done by a woman in Olympic competition. But she disappoints everyone when she stumbles early on. Current Tanya in the nondescript kitchen tells us, "My blade broke 2 days prior and they put it on crooked, so I wasn't sticking any landings. It was not my fault."
Again.
Which in this case, I really don't think it was her fault.
So I think that's something that ice skaters have to deal with. Like I tend to think that she was probably blaming because that seems to be her forte.
Yeah. Yeah. And you would think that if you had your ice skates bladed, you would have tried them before the Olympics.
Yeah. And she had 2 days to, I think, get accustomed to it. And you know, she was probably practicing nonstop.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. But the flashbacks tell her otherwise. We see younger Tanya months before the competition, gaining weight, staying out late, drinking, and of course, she's still smoking too. She placed fourth behind Nancy Kerrigan. Young Tanya seems heartbroken as she watches the skating replays from backstage. But current Tanya assures us that she was happy with fourth. She was not happy with fourth.
She was not happy with fourth.
No. Nobody is happy with fourth when you're in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Returning home after a poor skating performance is worse for young Tanya and Jeff's relationship than when she was skating well. We get a flashback of another knockdown, drag out fight. Things seem to have escalated. He shuts her hand in a car door.
Oof.
Ow. Oh, that was brutal. She flings a glass at him. He knocks her down. She kicks him in the balls. After a summer of this abuse, Tanya is done and she files for divorce. This causes Jeff to spin out, and after Tanya won't see him or return his calls, he takes matters into his own hands. Again, dumbass. He drives to Tanya's hotel room under the guise that he's delivering a bag that she forgot. She tells him through a chain door to beat it, which causes him to kick the door in and point a gun at her head.
Oof.
She yells at him to put it down. He does, and then puts the barrel under his chin. Tanya pleads with him to give her the gun, and when he finally points it down again, she makes a run for it. She darts out the door, and he fires a fucking shot at her. Tanya falls to the ground because I think the bullet like hit the car and bounced off and ricocheted, hit her, right?
Yeah.
Tanya falls to the ground while neighboring hotel guests come out to see the commotion. Tanya's cheek is only grazed, and Jeff points the gun at the bystanders, telling them, "Stand back!" Tanya clutches her bleeding face as Jeff pushes her into the passenger seat and drives off. The altercation causes him to swerve, and it's not long before he gets pulled over. As he slows to a stop, he hisses at Tanya through clenched teeth, "You say anything and I'll fucking kill you." The policeman approaches the driver's side and shines a light into the car. He sees the blood and asks Jeff to get out. Does he get arrested? Hell no.
Oof.
They even confiscated 2 guns out of his trunk and some alcohol, okay, before letting him go on his merry little way. Current Tanya says, "This is why I don't trust authorities. Jeff can talk his way out of anything. Never talk to Jeff." We get to Tanya's life a short while later. Her voiceover tells us, If you get fourth place in the Olympics, you don't get endorsement deals. You get the 6 a.m. shift at Spud City. Tanya is in a waitress uniform, weaving through tables at a diner. She grabs her smokes and goes outside for a cigarette break. Outside the back of the restaurant, she's approached by Diane, her old coach. Diane just came by to inform her that the Olympic Council just announced that the next Winter Olympics were going to be held again in 2 years instead of four, which would give Tanya another chance at a medal. Tanya complains that she's out of shape, and Diane leans beside her and says quietly, "Here is a shape."
Aww. I love that.
That's so cute. Tanya realizes that she has a second chance, and she's going to take it.
Oh, so much to unpack in this section. I cannot believe that cop saw a bleeding woman in distress and didn't do shit about it. And I was also shocked that Tanya seemed more scared of Jeff pointing the gun at himself than he was at her. He was pointing at her. She's like, "Put it down." And then she put it on his under his chin. She's like, "Put it down, put it down, put it down." Oh, Lord.
Yeah, that was right. And I couldn't believe the cop saw her bleeding face and was just like, "Oh, okay, cool, bye."
Well, I'm just taking this alcohol and guns away from you just to be safe. Just so, you know, you guys go do whatever you want, but at least you're not going to be drunk and in possession of firearms, so it's fine.
Well, it doesn't, I mean, back then, beating your wife was, like, not a big deal for police. Like, it was not, you know, it's awful.
Those were the days that it was also okay to hit your kids. And it was barely frowned down upon to be a drunk driver. Like, my dad, in his heyday, would say, like, if he got stopped by a cop or one of his friends got stopped by a cop and he was noticeably drunk, they'd be like, "Just go home. Don't go anywhere. Like, get yourself home safely." And they'd let him go.
Mm-hmm. Oof. But first, Diana has some stipulations. No heavy metal or blue nail polish. And Tanya has to apply herself. We get a montage of Tanya doing just that. Dun, 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 dun. She cleans up her act, puts 100% into her practice. Dun, 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 takes ballet lessons and trains like Rocky did in the movies. Dun, 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 dun. Her skating improves. Dun, 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 dun. She sticks all her landings. But her scores don't reflect that. Womp, 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 womp. She's learned that shouting at the judges during competition doesn't work. So instead, young Tanya chases down a judge as he walks to his car. He hears her calls but won't stop. And she has to rap on his window before he even acknowledges her. She asks, "Why don't you give me the scores I deserve?" And the judge, without making eye contact, tells her, "I will deny saying this, but it's never been entirely about the skating. You're just not the image we want to portray. We want to see an image of wholesome American family, and you just refuse to play along."
Was figure skating, like, a much bigger deal back then?
Huge. Huge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was, I think, at its height.
Yeah.
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 Okay. That makes more sense then.
The way, and I don't know if this was the way it was really said, but the way Margot Robbie said that line was so sad. And I don't know how, as a judge, you can see this young girl who's doing everything she can, coming from a horrible background that's not her fault.
Yeah.
And be like, "Well, we don't want to portray your image." And just, like, not have a heart. Like, how do you just not have a heart?
It's classist, and it still happens today, but people just stereotype on different things. It's just, this is your belief, this is how it is, and you got to play by the rules or don't play at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Tanya argues, "I don't have a wholesome American family. Why can't it just be about skating?" The judge responds by rolling up his window and driving away. They should be applauding her for rising above all of that shit.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. That's, like, today would be different.
They should have her a hero story. Yeah.
Yeah.
In an attempt to find a wholesome family, Tanya seeks out her mother to tell her about the Olympics. She goes to Lavanya's work, and her mom is not thrilled to see her. They sit uncomfortably at a booth, and Lavanya accuses Tanya of wanting something and tells her, "You'll always be a taker." Tanya, flustered, admits, "Well, this was a stupid fucking idea," and in a small voice asks, "Was anything I ever did good enough for you?" Lavanya smirks and informs her, "You were soft." Tanya's face falls, and she asks, at 3? Lavanya doubles down and defends the fact that her cruel ways made Tanya a champion. Still hungry for her mother's love, Tanya asks, "Was there ever a time, even when I was little, that you loved me?" Lavanya rants, "I gave you a gift, knowing you'd hate me for it. I'd rather have that than be nice. Hell, I didn't like my own mother." Tanya, realizing the futility of getting anything remotely resembling wholesome from her mother, tells her, "You cursed me," and leaves in a huff.
In a huff!
Tanya then resorts to calling Jeff and tells him, "I can't make it to the Olympics without you." Current day Tanya informs us, matter-of-factly, that she was just going to use him for the next 3 weeks and then dump his ass as soon as she made the team.
Oh. Yes.
It's all about the image.
Uh-huh. Poor girl. The two people that she can turn to try to get her to the Olympics are her mom and Jeff.
Yes, I know.
But of course, there's just one little thing to discuss before the Olympics. The incident. Ooh. All of our interviewees get a second or two of camera time as they say, "The incident, the incident, the incident, the incident," with varying degrees of gravitas. Except for Tanya, who holds her hands out like a carnival barker and says, "The thing you all came here for. What's the incident, you ask? Find out with us after this break." And we're back. Unfortunately, there's a few small notable things that happened before the incident. We cut to Tanya, Diane, and Jeff before a competition. Tanya's practicing when they are approached by a policeman. When she sees the cop, Tanya accuses, "Fuck, Jeff, what did you do now?" But it's not Jeff. A threat was made on Tanya's life. They got a phone call that said if she skated, she'd get a bullet in the back of the head. Diane asks how serious they should take this threat, and Jeff waves it off, telling the officer, "Skaters do this all the time to each other, pull pranks and stuff." But the threat was too much for Tanya, and she didn't wind up competing. We cut to young Jeff, who's washing his hands in the bathroom. He breaks the fourth wall to tell us, "That messed with Tanya's head. She wasn't right for a long time after that, which got me thinking, and that's not always my strong suit."
Oof.
Jeff exits the restroom into a bar. He sits across from his friend Sean in a booth and proposes, "What if we do the same thing to Nancy Kerrigan right before the Nationals?" Sean's into it. "Yeah, mess with her head?" Jeff concludes, "I won't be the first guy to cheat at figure skating. It's not all prim and proper." He decides to send some threatening letters, and Sean practically slaps him across the face, telling him, "You amateur! They'll be postmarked for Portland. You gotta go down there and do it personally. I got a guy. I shouldn't even tell you his name. Derek." But it'll cost you about $1,000 for him to make that trip. We next get a glimpse of the masterminds, a.k.a. Sean's guys. They're Derek
Smith. Masterminds in heavy air
quotation
marks. Yes.
They're Derek Smith and Shane Stant, a couple of not-too-bright-looking 20-somethings that are in a car driving towards Nancy, happily singing to the radio, which is playing the most threatening, knee-busting song. Gloria, Gloria, think you got the number, Gloria. And they're singing along.
The next series of flashbacks are hard to follow, and that might be intentional because it involves Tanya's knowledge of the incident. Current day Tanya tells us it was bullshit. They said they found some piece of paper in my writing with Nancy's schedule on it. Current day Jeff comes on to inform us that of course Tanya knew what was going on, but she just thought we were sending letters. Tanya didn't know about the assault because there wasn't supposed to be an assault. We see younger Jeff going to Sean's parents' house and interrupting their dinner to hand his friend $1,000. But in the days that follow, nothing happened. Later at the rink, while Tanya practices in the background, Jeff is pissed and yelling at Sean because he suspects that his lackeys have taken the money and ran. Sean assures his friend that the mission just needs an infusion of cash, and Jeff tells him he's not an idiot. He yells onto the ice, "Tanya, the death threat's off." She doesn't care at all and tells the two, "I have bigger shit to fry," which causes Sean to chuckle and correct her, "You mean fish to fry? Because shit is a dish best served never." He's joking, but Tanya's incensed and tells him he's not a spy. He still lives with his parents and says many other not nice things to him. And finally skates away yelling, "Stay the fuck away from me." Which I feel was a little harsh. I feel like she kind of like attacked him here. I mean, he is an idiot and whatever, but I don't know. Words flashed across the screen. They read 1994 Detroit Nationals, January 6th practice session. Shane, one of Sean's lackeys, is at the rink Nancy Kerrigan is practicing in. He makes his way through a back entrance and looks shifty as fuck as he walks through the rink corridors. He finally makes it to the ice and asks the guy in the stands, which one's Kerrigan? The spectator points her out and she exits the ice and passes right by Shane. He lets her get a few steps ahead of them and then follows. He closes the distance in a nearly deserted hallway, extends a baton, smacks her in the back of the leg and hurries away. Nancy cries out in pain and people start making their way to her. Shane tries to make a quick exit. He gets to a pair of doors, but they're locked. So instead of finding an alternate route, he butt heads the glass, breaking it, and runs out to the getaway car. But not before inexplicably body slamming an innocent passerby. Way to be inconspicuous. I didn't get that. Why did he take that dude down as he was running by?
Actually, you said butt heads.
I know. You said butt heads instead of head butts.
Well, it's fitting he was a butt head.
Do you want me to redo that?
No, that was perfect. then he just football slams a man to the ground. But he just smacked her in the back of the legs, right? Like once. Yes. Like it wasn't like a total beatdown, like the world was made to believe.
No, that's... but he broke her knee, right?
No, because this is what confused me, because they referenced him breaking her knee, but I think that they just thought her knee was broken and in actuality it was bruised.
Yeah,
it was. And just I don't know if they allude to that fact in this movie or if they just let us believe that her knee was broken, because she competes shortly thereafter and I don't think she would be able to if her knee was broken. I think she'd be out for like a couple of years at least.
Yeah.
See, and that's what I was thinking, that this just seems like way blown out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And well, it is.
It was at the time, because it was the early days of the constant news feed. And so since they had these news channels that were broadcasting things 24/7, like they had to feed the beast, as they said, and they had to keep, like, I guess, filtering stories about, was it broken? Was it not broken? How did it happen? How did he escape? Why did he tackle that man in the street?
Why did he tackle that man in the street?
No idea.
You know, he was in his way. Yeah. Why go around when you can go through?
Same thing with the door. Why go around when you can butt head through?
Yes.
Next, we see Martin Maddox, ex-hard copy reporter, who tells us, we had no idea that something like this could be done by the two biggest boobs populated in a story solely consisting of boobs. We cut to younger Jeff and Ben. His phone is ringing off the hook. It's Tanya, and she informs her ex-husband that they broke Nancy's knee, and it's all over the news. Jeff rushes over to Sean's house, and Sean is elated because he's a
so
dumbass.
He's so dumb.
Yes.
Makes me so mad how dumb he is.
Especially at the end when we see the real Sean, and you realize that they weren't exaggerating.
No. No, they weren't exaggerating at all. Yeah.
Honestly, like in a non-joking way, I think that he probably had some mental disabilities or stunting. Like I think he probably had a really low IQ.
Yeah.
Just the way his mind worked and the things he did and the way he thought things, it just...
I've also been friends with a couple of compulsive liars that I've known, like they've been compulsive liars.
Don't call me out like that. Jeez.
I'm not going to say who I'm talking about, but some people in my life. But it's just, it's uncanny because oftentimes I'm like, I know you're lying and I know that you're lying, but you're still like grasping onto this and like creating layers on top of the lie to try to cover your story. And I never understood it, but it also just seemed to be like just a character trait of some people too. So he might have been compulsive liar / low IQ, just sandwiched together in a wonderful fucking Sean sandwich.
Oh. But I think he also thought that he was doing something nice.
Yeah. I think he did. Yeah.
Right.
I think he just wanted the notoriety because he was almost like, look at what I did. Like,
yeah.
That too. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he talks about his whole security. Well, we'll get to it. But yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
His parents are recording the ongoing news coverage, and Jeff drags his friend to the back of the house and hisses, it was only supposed to be threatening letters. It winds up that Sean went rogue. He calls himself Tanya's bodyguard, and this exposure is probably going to get him a lot of protection gigs, and the money is going to start rolling in due to him changing the course of history.
Oh, see. Makes all sense now.
Yeah.
Yes. Of course. Of course.
This mindset might make sense until he admits, and by the way, I was the one who called in the threats to Tanya, too.
Ooh, see?
Oh!
Yeah. I didn't see that one coming.
I didn't either. I
saw that. I was like, oh, shit!
You dumbass!
Literally, he's the one that caused this whole thing to spiral out of control.
Yeah.
And we need to get those boys out of Detroit because they don't have any money.
Sucks to suck.
Jeff begins attacking his former friend, but thinks better of it and only gets a light choke in before leaving him in a huff. The words January 7th, 1994, the next day, flash across the screen. And also shout out to my mom. Her birthday's January 7th.
Aww. Happy birthday.
Oh my god, that was my ex-boyfriend's birthday too. Dan was January 7th.
Do we not like ex-boyfriend?
Oh no, we're fine. It's
yeah. Oh, okay.
It's,
then no, I will take, just I will retract my boo then.
And we see Tanya on the ice as she's competing for the Olympics. Her performance is stellar and she makes it to the Olympic team.
Woo-hoo.
But no one's there to support her. We see Jeff watching her number from a small TV nearby as he wires Shane and Derek money. And Lavanya is also watching it from a TV while working. Her boss yells at her to get back to her tables, but Lavanya's not moving because she wants to see her daughter's face when she finishes her routine. She does, and Tanya gives a smug smile to the crowd. Martin Maddox cuts in to tell us how obvious the assailants were. They
so stupid.
He's watching this footage. They moved their car every 15 minutes for 2 days, and this was to avoid suspicion.
Nothing suspicious going on here. Look away.
Until they realized they were at the wrong venue. And they also left a paper trail a mile wide. It didn't take long for them to get arrested. And we see Shane getting led away in handcuffs before we cut back to Tanya leaving the rink. Jeff's in her ear saying they need to coordinate their stories. He's interrupted by a little girl who asks Tanya for an autograph. Tanya is just tickled pink, and she signs her name because the little girl admits that she wants to grow up and be an ice skater just like her.
Don't do it. Don't do it, little girl. The judges will hate you.
Tanya's dreams are seeming to come true until she and Jeff get to the elevator banks to go up to their hotel room. They are met by the FBI, who have just a few questions for them. No big, no big. They follow Jeff and Tanya upstairs, insisting that the questions are just a formality. They're talking to everyone in the hotel room. The questioning seems pretty low-key. Tanya and Jeff give their alibis. They were both asleep. And when they state that they have to leave or miss their flight, the FBI agents offer them a ride to the airport. Tanya happily accepts, while Jeff looks on apprehensively. But before they leave, one of the FBI agents asks, "But first, who's Derek?" Tanya says, "I don't know any Derricks." And Jeff mumbles sadly, "I know a lot of Derricks." Next, we see Tanya after she landed in Portland, getting bombarded by reporters on her way to the car at the airport. Tanya handles their questions like a pro. However, once she's in the car with bodyguard Sean and Jeff, things start to fall apart. Initially, Tanya is elated. She's going to the Olympics. Woo! But Jeff is spiraling. He demands, "Sean, tell me everything. Who did you talk to?" Sean feigns ignorance and insists, "I didn't tell anybody anything. They could torture me and I still wouldn't talk." We cut to a series of flashbacks where Sean is telling everyone and anyone about the assault in a way very similar to what I expect Marlin and Harlan from I Love You to Death, the movie we covered previously, did. Sean tells a guy in a bar, a kid on the street, a guy next to him at the urinal. "Yeah, it only costs $65,000. Sean's loose lips have the FBI at his door. 2 days later, those ships are sinking. We see him getting questioned in his parents' living room, and it only takes two questions before he crumbles and blurts out, Jeff Galooly did it. He planned everything. Almost immediately, a slew of reporters show up outside of Jeff's house, and Sean calls Jeff demanding, we need to meet. Sean tells his friend, I gotta get out of town. So they rendezvous at the Golden Buddha restaurant to figure out their next moves. Unbeknownst to Jeff, Sean, the bodyguard, is cooperating with the police and wearing a wire. He tries to get Jeff to admit to the assault, but Jeff's on to him. He grabs his ex-friend's head and whispers in his ear, I hope you hear me, you fat fuck. You made your bed, now die in it. Because the FBI is involved, Diane offers Tanya and Jeff the services of her husband, who's a lawyer. Tanya and Jeff go to her house and whisper yell at each other in the living room while waiting to meet him. Jeff tells her, we need to get our story straight. And Tanya demands, what happened? Because this is her life and it's going to get ruined. Jeff assures her that he will tell everyone she's not involved when the lawyer comes. Tanya immediately blurts out to the lawyer, it was only supposed to be letters. This spooks Jeff and he hauls Tanya out of the house quicker than you can say, lickety split. He practically drags her to the car and once inside the vehicle, Tanya demands to know the full story. Jeff refuses to say and her anger and voice rise until Jeff silences her by smacking her in the face. Yeah, domestic violence. Tanya's voiceover says, that's when I knew. He never admitted to me he actually did it, but I knew at that moment he had planned it and had it done.
Ooh. It just always gets me every time. Like, he seems so calm, yeah. And then he just smokes her.
Yeah.
It is terrible.
He goes from zero to abusive in like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. So consensus, who here thinks Tanya knew about the whole thing? Anybody?
No. So according to her, no. Which right. She would say, right? This movie's kind of according to her.
It's, yeah, she was a consultant on it.
Yeah, so yeah. I don't know. I mean, if the movie is to be taken at face value, you know, I don't think she should have really gotten into much trouble at all. Like, but I don't know. Like I said, I'm anxious to do the research into it and see if that's what everybody says.
Yeah.
Corinne, Jessica, thoughts?
At the time when it was happening, I always assumed that she was tangentially involved. And actually, according to this movie, she's kind of tangentially involved as well.
Yeah, I completely thought in the moment as it was happening that she was involved wholeheartedly. But the media led us to believe that at the time.
Yeah.
I'm torn. I think she knew about the letters, like this movie kind of indicated. Mm. But I don't know because, like, it's hard because her and Nancy used to be friends. Mm-hmm. But I can also understand if she knew because she was so frustrated with how the scoring stuff was going. So I don't know.
The only thing I think so about hard. That is like her whole career, she was frustrated with the scoring stuff, you know, and had the same stuff happening and she didn't do it previously. Why do it now? Maybe she thought this was her last chance and that's why. I don't know. It's so hard. It's so hard.
But we cut to Tanya telling the FBI everything, who in turn tell Jeff everything.
Jason. What was that? That was such bullshit.
She was trying to probably save her ass. And so she
I mean that the FBI told Jeff.
Yeah, that was a bad move. Again, like, I think in this day and age, they wouldn't because that would put her in danger in a sense.
Yeah, but they didn't. Yeah, I thought that was such bullshit.
Jeff races to Tanya's house to confront her about giving him up. Tanya sees him coming and locks the bedroom door before he storms inside the house. He knocks as she packs a bag, and he pleads for her to open up, saying, all I wanted was you. What should I do now? Tanya coldly tells him, I think you should kill yourself, and then slips out the bedroom window. Then we get a montage of the press coverage. First, Sean's interview with 2020, where he insists he is a professional bodyguard and an international espionage expert. As the reporter tells him that that's blatantly untrue, Sean sticks to his story and lies through his teeth with a straight face. Then we see the pandemonium that is Tanya's life. She's bombarded by the press everywhere she goes. News feeds speculate on whether she'll be allowed to compete in light of the fact that Jeff admitted that she knew about the attack from the beginning. Jeff, Sean, and Shane all get arrested. The press is also there to capture that. And finally, current day, Jeff informs us that he got arrested for racketeering and was fined $100,000 because even though he didn't plan the attack, the fact that he didn't come forward and tried covering it up made him guilty. The press even camped out at Lavanya's house, and she, bitch that she is, put out a red velvet rope and told all the reporters if they wanted a picture of her, they'd have to stand behind it. And they did. Current day Tanya looks directly at the camera and tells us, I thought being famous was going to be fun. I was loved for a minute, and then I was hated. Then I was a punchline. It was like getting abused all over again, but this time, it's by all of you. We cut back to younger Tanya reeling from everything in her apartment when there's an insistent knock on her door. It's her mother, and Tanya pulls her inside away from the prying eyes of the reporters outside. After some uncharacteristic, polite small talk, Tanya asks what her mother wants, and Lavanya says, I don't know, just to tell you that I'm on your side. You have a lot of supporters out there, and I'm proud of you. She goes to leave, but Tanya stops her by rushing over and hugging her. She's clinging on to her mother, crying, when Lavanya quietly asks, did you know about the attack? You can tell me. Tanya realizes this was a ruse to get a confession and pushes her mom away, pats her down until she finds her tape recorder, and tells her to get the fuck out. She throws her mom out and flings the recorder at her back on their way. But before she goes back inside, she sees her truck getting towed, and Martin Maddox, fucker that he is, pops onto the screen and admits, sometimes I flattened her tires. Sometimes I got her car towed because we needed her picture. There was a 24-hour news feed we had to fill now. Ugh, it's so fucked.
Yeah.
The worst moment of your life, not only do you have to get it captured, but you have reporters fucking with you in your car just to get you outside.
Just to get pictures. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to Tanya getting dressed for a press announcement with Diane and her lawyer husband. She puts on her Team USA Olympic jacket as her counselor advises her to keep insisting that she knew nothing. Tanya gives her statement in front of a room full of reporters, apologizing and insisting she's innocent, while her voiceover tells us, and when the Olympic committee threatened to kick me off the team, I filed a $10 million lawsuit against them. Things were getting ugly. But do you think CBS, who was airing the Olympics, wouldn't let this ginormous event happen? For this showdown between me and Nancy to compete? We cut to weeks later. Tanya is allowed on the Olympic team, and we see her tearfully getting ready for her performance. First, she's at her makeup station alone, crying and practicing her smile. Then it's her turn on the ice, and we see her backstage with a couple of people excitedly trying to lace her skates up. An announcer tells us, Tanya had a problem with her laces in practice, and if she doesn't come out here soon, she'll be disqualified. Tanya seems frantic, and her skates aren't cooperating. She pushes past the people attending to her and takes to the ice. Only moments into her performance, she attempts a jump, doesn't land it, and stops. She tearfully skates over to the judge to show them that her laces have broken. The world watches while the announcer says she will be allowed to fix her skates. We only see the end of her performance as current day Tanya asks, can I say something about Nancy Kerrigan? I skate my best and get 8, but we all knew I wasn't going to win because the committee was against me, but Nancy gave a good skate. I never said different. And she gets the silver. And while she's up there accepting her medal, she looks like she stepped in poo. And I'm the poor sport in this scenario. We cut back to Nancy on the podium, and she does indeed look like she stepped in poo. Then we cut back to Tanya's hearing, which they graciously delayed until after the Olympics. She's standing in front of the judge as he announces her sentence. This blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
3 years probation, $100,000 fine with an additional $10,000 going to the FBI for special circumstances and $50,000 to the Olympics, along with 500 hours of community service, a psychological evaluation, and a lifetime ban from the U.S. Figure Skating Association and all of their competitions. That's insane.
They were probably glad to see her go. They're like, woo, finally.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. And again, the only other word for it is heartbreaking at the end. Tanya stands in front of the judge and tearfully tells him, I'd rather do the jail time and I don't have an education. All I know how to do is skate. I'm nothing if I can't skate. I'm not some monster. I didn't do anything and I'm getting a life sentence. Just send me to jail and let me still skate afterwards. But the judge is unmoved. That was so heartbreaking that she thinks she's nothing if she can't skate. So sad.
Well, that's the only thing that got her any positive recognition, because everything else in her life was just so abusive.
Shitty. Yes.
The thing that really pissed me off was that the men that actually did this and carried shit out got less than she did.
Mm-hmm.
Such bullshit, because she's a woman. Then we cut to Tanya sitting in a dark room making popcorn, watching The Late Show, where she is the butt of David Letterman's top 10 list. And then we cut to Jeff, who informs us he was sentenced to 2 years, but he was out in 8 months.
Mm.
And all that he will ever be known for only happened in a matter of months. We see him in the morning. He's going to jail. He's eating cereal as the last of the reporters leave his front lawn, like it was all a dream. Behind him on a TV screen, we see O.J. Simpson getting arrested. So they've moved on. Then Lavanya comes on the screen and informs us, I never see Tanya anymore, but that's fine. I live a full life, as she takes a swig of brown liquor. And, so fucking funny, her bird pecks at her cheek and her breathing too. Current day Jeff tells us, Tanya would never have called in the death threat. I was caught up in all the terrible things she was saying about me and not the fact that I totally ruined her career. Finally, we cut to current day Tanya, who informs us, after figure skating, I didn't have a lot of options. I was the second most known person in the world, after Bill Clinton. That had to mean something. So, I became a lady boxer. We see Tanya in the boxing ring getting pummeled as her voiceover adds, America, you know they want someone to love, they want someone to hate. And the haters always say, Tanya, tell the truth, but there's no such thing as truth. I mean, that's bullshit. Everyone has their own truth. We get a shot of Tanya getting knocked out in a boxing ring, cross-cut with a shot of her executing the triple axel in her heyday on an ice skating rink. In both instances, the crowd is going wild while the song Dream a Little Dream of Me plays in the background. Tanya's final shot is her hitting the boxing ring floor. She spits out a mouthful of blood. Her voiceover says, that's the story of my life. Past Tanya grabs her mouthpiece and breaks the fourth wall to tell us, and that's the fucking truth, before pulling herself off the ground. Then we see words, which are updates on the characters. Lavanya hasn't had contact with Tanya for years, and last Tanya heard, her mother lived behind a porn shop. Jeff remarried after he got out of jail, but now is currently happily married to his third wife. Tanya is also married, does professional landscaping and deck building. She's happily married with a 7-year-old son and wants everyone to know that she's a good mother. Then we get the full performance where the real Tanya Harding does her triple axel. And the actual clips of the real Sean, the real Lavanya, and the real Jeff and Tanya in interview clips.
Mm. The end.
Oh, my Lord. What a ride.
That was a ride.
Yeah. Ash looks traumatized.
It was so sad. And I watched it a long time ago, like when it first came out. And then I watched it again before doing this podcast. I had forgotten how sad it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was the same. I forgot about all the abusive parts.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot everything.
Yeah. So sad.
So awful.
I got a couple of little glimpses of my mom and Lavanya. My mom was a heavy drinker, and when she drank, she was real, real mean. So I was like, ah, traumatic.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Oh, don't be. It made me the person that I am. See, I rise above. I don't.
Good.
I don't.
Don't impose upon others.
I don't use it as an excuse as to why I am the way I am.
Yeah. Good.
So let's go over our dry kiss ratings. 1 kiss, do not watch. 2 kiss, if you only had 3 channels, you might watch it for a while before changing to an infomercial and then inadvertently buying yourself knives and then feel guilty, particularly when they don't cut a can as advertised. So many regrets. 3 kisses, yay, would kiss this movie again. 4 kisses, the date night movie you've been waiting for, which applies to rom-coms, not this theme. 5 kisses. If this movie were life, you'd have gotten dressed by cute cartoon animals, some squirrels immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a motherfucking unicorn. Perfection.
I think our guests should give their dry kiss ratings first.
Oh, no.
Unless you don't want to, we'd be happy to go first.
I got this. So I would give this a 4. Not the date night you've been waiting for, yeah, but the movie you've been, I'd give it a 4. I really enjoyed this movie.
See, I'm between a 2 and a 3.
Oh, why? Do tell.
Because it wasn't so boring that I would want to, like, cruise around other shows, you know?
Uh-huh.
But also a 3 because I have watched it again. And I saw it previously. And it's good because it's nice to watch it for the first time and then forget all about it to watch it again and be surprised by everything. And I thought it was really cool how they did the flashbacks and tied it into everything with the interviews as well. I thought that was a really nice touch. So it's not a boring movie, but it's also like, I'm really picky with my movies. I love movies. So definitely not a 4, but
4 for me. I like how they broke the fourth wall a lot too. I thought that was a really clever way to do things.
Yeah. Me or you? Me or you?
Okay. So Tamara, thank you for choosing this movie. I have never seen it. I have heard of it. And it was something that I was kind of interested in seeing, but I knew the story. So I was like, yeah, I don't need to see it. But now I did. So I don't think that this is the date night I've been waiting for. This is a 4 dry kiss movie. I feel like it's really well done. It's not something that I'm going to rewatch ever again, but that's just because it's a hard movie to watch, and I prefer rewatching movies that bring me joy. So yeah, 4 dry kisses, thought it was really well done. If this had been not done as kind of a comedy, even though I didn't think it was funny, it would have been so bleak. And so the way that they presented the whole thing, I thought was really great. And it also gave me insight into Tonya Harding's life, which I was like, ooh, that's shit. So yeah. 4 dry kisses. What about you, Tam?
I'm going to give it 5 dry. I'm just kidding. No. I'm going to say this movie's a solid 3, although I thought it was really done. It was smartly done. And even though I lived through the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan fiasco, the incident, like, this gave me new insight into the lives and the things that were going on at the time. And also, it was kind of cool to see Tonya's point of view, because that was kind of laced throughout this whole thing. I don't say I would kiss this movie again, because I agree that it's hard to watch. It's a little traumatizing. Good for once. I say definitely watch it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Allison Janney and Margot Robbie were insanely good in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely worth a watch. I myself am probably not going to watch it ever again, but I think you should check it out. Now we get to go to the 4 Musketeers of Diversity, which of course, how many musketeers are showing up at this table at the movie? We have body diversity, sexual diversity, racial diversity, and disability representation. I'm going to go out on a limb and say almost all absent.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for the bodyguard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who might also kind of be disability representation, because we can all agree that he's probably lower on the IQ scale.
Yeah.
But he wasn't portrayed as that.
But he was a bad guy, so do we really want that?
Yeah. Yeah. True and fair, because I think we had a movie not too long ago where there was, like, definite diversity in it. But I'm like, but they're all criminals, and they're all in jail, so...
Yeah. So, no one's showing up to the party. No knights at the round table.
Zero musketeers.
Yes.
Zero musketeers. I think we should let our 2 guests pick our grab bag topics, if they're so inclined, if there's anything in this list that tickles your fancy that you would like to answer.
Yeah, okay. Jess, do you have one you want to call out?
Who would you develop an unhealthy obsession over?
Ooh. Ooh.
Oh, that's that. I have an answer. I have an answer.
Okay.
Well, I already developed an unhealthy obsession over Martin Maddox, because I was like, Bobby Cannavale played him.
Yeah.
And who I love.
I love him. I love Bobby Cannavale. Yeah.
And I was like, but Bobby Cannavale in this movie is tanned for Jesus, and his hair is wild. And so I was like, I need to find a picture of this man. And so I went searching for Martin Maddox hard copy. And you know what? Really hard to find, because he has a different last name than Martin Maddox, even though he goes by Martin Maddox on hard copy.
Oh, what is it?
I can't remember any of my information that I got other than the fact that I was like, I did eventually track him down.
Oh, Corinne, that doesn't count as an unhealthy obsession if you don't need him to name.
I had an unhealthy obsession with him.
If it's the guy I just found a picture of, he's bald.
No, it's not the guy that you found a picture of.
Okay.
He doesn't show up when you type in Martin Maddox.
I think I would develop an unhealthy obsession for the wrong reasons over Lavanya, because I want to know why she is the way she is. Like, I want to know her life story. I want to know who hurt her or didn't hug her as a child. Like, there's got to be an explanation for how horrible she is. And maybe it's just like me trying to figure out my own childhood is why I'm so, like, just confused and very, very just intrigued by why she is the way she is.
Yeah, that makes sense. Can I pick the bird?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I really liked that bird and I want to know more about him. And Lavanya, you better be treating him good.
I know. That is her sixth husband and she is known to yell and abuse her husbands.
Yes, she better not be abusing that birdie. It's my choice. Jessica's just rolling her eyes at me.
No, because I also loved the bird.
Oh.
And I was so... like I said at the beginning, I died when I saw that the bird was a legitimate thing and that it wasn't just like a gimmick for the movie.
That's okay, you guys. We have developed unhealthy obsessions over less, so you're all good for the bird. The bird's a good choice.
I read a little fun fact that Allison Janney, she actually does not like birds. And so they had to go through like several birds that would be like just chill on her shoulder where she didn't like freak out.
Oh my God. What? That's like the worst role for her to get if she doesn't like birds.
I know.
Yeah, and that bird was fucking clipping her ear. Mm-hmm. I was like, I was like, damn, you know what? I don't blame Allison Janney. I'm not a bird lover myself. I like birds outside where they fly around and they shit on cars, not in cages. So, yeah, no. But
I'm going to pick Man in the Mirror. Who do we see ourselves most in the movie? Because there's not a lot of good options. So I'm interested to see what you guys will say.
The bird. The obvious answer is the bird.
I'm going to say Martin Maddox.
Oh.
Just because he seems like he's very sarcastic and just sick of dumb shit. And that's me. So. And I have nice hair like him. So.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
I think I would pick Sean's mom. What? Yes. You want me to read that? Okay, honey.
That would be perpetual. People pleaser.
I love it how you're challenging us with this, Ash. What is the most fucked up thing I could throw at you?
Jeez.
I'm going to say in my 20s, I think I was a little bit of a Nancy Kerrigan, only in the fact that I tried to do what was right and what was expected of me. But behind closed doors, I'm like, why the fuck am I doing this shit? Seriously, folks?
Gotcha. Okay.
And I see myself most as... Tanya Harding's ice skates.
Broken?
Broken, gliding around on a cold surface, not knowing where I'm going in life, but still managing to do some triple axels accidentally.
Well, wait, I want to change my answer. I'm just kidding.
All right. First, super exciting. You can go and listen to Histories and Mysteries Uncovered, where they are going to cover Tanya Harding IRL. So we'll be able to compare and contrast according to what we just watched and what actually happened.
Yes, and our episode will actually come out before this episode does. Mm-hmm. So ours will come out Sunday and theirs comes out Tuesdays.
Yes.
So if you haven't already, go back and listen to Histories and Mysteries Uncovered, where they're giving us the Tanya Harding real story.
Ta-da! So in the month of April, we are doing the theme April Fools. And this movie actually bridges very nicely between our March Madness theme and April Fools, because there were a lot of fools in this movie, as well as it being true. So what movie are we doing next week?
We're doing The Quiz Lady.
Woo!
starring Awkwafina, who we all love.
And Sandra Oh.
And Sandra Oh.
Who I love.
And yeah. Sandra Oh, sorry. I like Awkwafina a little bit more than Sandra Oh. Sorry, Sandra. Oh,
gotcha.
Me too.
The shade. And if you have anything you'd like to say about Quiz Lady, I, Tanya, the wonderful ladies of Histories and Mysteries Uncovered.
Only nice things.
same.
You can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, and TwitterX, all at onedrykiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank the lovely ladies of Histories and Mysteries Uncovered for joining us.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us. This was so much fun.
Thank you.
And we would like to bid you all adieu with one dry kiss.
Kiss.
Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time.
What are you talking about? Jeff and Tanya's kiss. La, 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 la.